May it please the court.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. We're here to talk some more about jurisdiction and personal jurisdiction that the trial courts have over non-resident defendants. I have the privilege of representing Cedar Crest Apartments and Peterson Properties in a lawsuit that was filed in Jackson County, Missouri. Now, interestingly enough, that lawsuit arises out of an accident that happened over in Johnson County, Kansas. My clients, Cedar Crest Apartments and Peterson Properties, are both Kansas residents. They're Kansas entities formed in Kansas, doing business in Kansas. And the plaintiff at the time of this incident was a resident of Kansas. And so there is absolutely no connection between the injury and the accident and the state of Missouri. And so the question before this court is, under our writ, is can we get the preliminary writ made absolute? And I think that it's an absolute must that the trial court in Jackson County does not have jurisdiction over the relators in this case.
But your opponent argues that if you, in essence, pierce the veil and look at the companies that form these two defendants, that in fact they do have jurisdiction over them. And so why shouldn't we do that?
Well, I think that's stretching maybe what he argues, and it's certainly not what's pled, but I think that the case law is clear that there's specific jurisdiction and general jurisdiction. And you look to the distinct entities involved. And Missouri cases are clear, just as the federal court cases are clear, that every entity is separate and distinct from one another. And so we have to look at the parties in this case. Now, I will submit to you that the motion to dismiss was filed on behalf of three defendants. But before this court, the writ is related to two of those defendants because one of the defendants' enterprises is a Missouri entity. Now, it's incorporated in the state of Missouri, but it should be known that it employs no personnel and its principal place of business is in Kansas. We're not here to talk about enterprises because this case is about Peterson Properties and Cedar Crest Apartments. But I want to talk about...
If we did pierce the veil, then in effect they would be doing business here. But you're saying they didn't plead or show facts to pierce the corporate veil?
There is absolutely no allegations or pleadings to suggest that the corporate veil should be pierced in this case. There just isn't. The sum total of the allegations in the petition relating to jurisdiction are that all defendants transact business in Missouri or contracts, and that the Missouri entities, KCP&L and the individual defendants as well as enterprises, are registered to do business or formed in Missouri. So I think that there, as far as the petition goes, there's absolutely nothing. And then they haven't put on any facts or evidence to suggest that this is a case of piercing the corporate veil. Because truth of the matter is, it's not. These are separate and distinct entities, and there is no evidence to suggest that enterprises, just because it's a parent company, doesn't automatically subject its subsidiaries to jurisdiction in the state of Missouri. If we did that, then all of the cases we would be looking at in terms of the general jurisdiction, all of the entities that have parent companies that operate on a national basis would somehow get jurisdiction over entities in Missouri. And that's against everything that this court as well as the U.S. Supreme Court has said.
So there are three defendants and only two are on appeal, and the one defendant, which is the parent company, would remain? Is that what I'm understanding?
Okay. They are not subject to this writ. So the relief that we are asking for is that the motion to dismiss be granted with respect to Cedar Crest Apartments and Peterson Properties. Now, as best I can tell, we know that there's two ways to get jurisdiction, and in this case, the plaintiff argues they have both specific jurisdiction and general jurisdiction. And so I've combed through the brief, I've combed through the laws, and as best I can tell, their argument on specific jurisdiction is that we did business, but they miss the point of the requirement that, A, we didn't do business, but let's just assume for a minute that were the case, is that the tort or the business has to relate to the cause of action at issue. And in this case, There is zero connection to it. The facts that led to this injury is it's not even a tenant of the apartment complex. What it is the apartment complex had hired a contractor to redo balconies on the apartment complex, and one of the contractors hired another contractor, also another Kansas entity, and one of the employees there walked into an overhead power line carrying a ladder. And so that's all in Kansas. All of those entities we're talking about are all in Kansas. All of those employees are in Kansas. The injury happened in Kansas. And so if we look at the long arm statute, which provides the different five different prongs, is transact business. There's no evidence that any of Cedar Crest properties or Cedar Crest Apartments or Peterson properties transacted business, made any contract in the state of Missouri, committed a tort in the state of Missouri, own real estate or property in the state of Missouri, or insure an entity or something in the state of Missouri. None of the elements of the long-arm statute are met, let alone there being a connection with this action before us.
And why do they say they can bring suit here?
Well, they just go and they say, well, they transact business. And then they look to the fact that Cedar Crest Apartments has filed lawsuits back in 1997 to 2000. They put a CaseNet printout that says Cedar Crest filed 8 landlord-tenant actions, and so therefore they transact business here. Well, A, those are completely unrelated. They deal with landlord-tenant. And B, I don't even think that's credible evidence for the court to consider for purposes of this. So that's what they say with respect to Cedar Crest. And then with respect to Peterson Properties, they make the argument, and this court addressed in Norfolk, the idea of availing yourself to the courts is not enough to create general jurisdiction, let alone specific jurisdiction in the context of when it's unrelated to what's at issue.
I guess the subtext here, though, is what would you do in a case where you've got multiple defendants, and under the analysis that you're laying out, which certainly sounds consistent with recent Supreme Court precedent, you've got two defendants who can only be sued in Kansas and one who can only be sued in Missouri. How do we resolve that seeming inequity?
Well, A, you're talking about my three clients, correct? Enterprises and then the Cedar Crest.
Right. Assuming that two of them can only be sued in Kansas and one can only be sued in Missouri.
Because the other one can be sued in Kansas because it is its principal place of business is in Kansas.
I understand.
But under your assumption, that would assume that you've got a viable claim against each one of them. And so in order for that Peterson or for that Enterprises entity to have some connection to the injury, the lawsuit that happened in Kansas, there has to be a connection there, and the long-arm statute would likely extend jurisdiction, whether it's because they committed a tort in Kansas. The Enterprises entity committed a tort in Kansas. I will submit that the Enterprises entity is only in this case for purposes of an attempt to create jurisdiction over the other two subsidiary entities. But if they were to state some sort of claim, it would be based upon the tortious conduct committed there or the contracts, because what they're dealing with is contractors that were on site in Kansas, and so that would be a Kansas contract, and so the long arm statute would likely be sufficient to bring that defendant over to Kansas. But that doesn't exist in this case because we're taking everything that happened in Kansas and trying to say, well, let's let the Missouri court decide, when the Missouri courts have no connection to this case. And so I think we can establish that the long-arm statute isn't met, and because the long-arm statute isn't met, you don't even get to the second prong, the due process prong. But if we did, and we look at all of that, again, it goes to looking at the connections between my clients and the state of Missouri, which they don't exist. The best that they've come up with is the lawsuits back in 1997 to 2000, landlord-tenant actions, and the registration to do business, which this court has addressed in the Norfolk case, that neither of those are viable to create jurisdiction, and certainly not enough to satisfy the notions of fair play that is required under the due process requirements. In this case, they also make a claim that general jurisdiction exists, and I think the Daimler Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, spoke and made it very clear that If it's not your home state, there's no general jurisdiction. And in order for it to be your home state, it has to be where your principal place of business is or where your entity was formed. And in this case, both of the relators in this case are Kansas entities with their principal place of business in Kansas. And so this does not present a case of exceptional circumstances. Certainly, the filing of the lawsuits, the landlord-tenant actions, or the registration to do business is not sufficient to create the exceptional circumstance case. And that's what this court said in Norfolk. I want to quickly address this idea of the plaintiff's attempt to maybe blur the lines between subject matter jurisdiction and diversity jurisdiction and personal jurisdiction, because those are two separate things. We've got personal jurisdiction is driven by the notions of due process, where subject matter jurisdiction is not. And they make the argument that because Cedar Crest is an LLC, its members are Missouri residents, and therefore it's a Missouri entity. But that has been rejected by the courts, and I cite the cases in my brief, because, again, what you would be doing is you would be doing away with the limited liability protections provided to these entities when they form businesses. You have to have a purposeful availment to the state, and that doesn't exist simply because a member of an entity is a resident of that state. And so I just want to address that briefly. If the court has no further questions, I will allow my opponent an opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. You know, one thing I want to touch on, and then I want to go back, there's three reasons I believe why this court should deny the writ. But before getting to that, first, one thing to keep in mind is that the affidavit of James Peterson, which is, I believe, Exhibit A to relator's petition and was Exhibit 1 to our response at page 18, identifies Enterprises as the managing member Cedar Crest. And so what you have, in effect, is that the managing is occurring in Missouri and the actions are occurring in Kansas. The head is in Missouri, the hands are in Kansas.
It is a different parent corporation, so unless you pled enough to pierce and showed facts to pierce the corporate veil, though, why does that matter?
I believe that matters with regard to the long-arm statute and how it discusses the agency relationship and how that relates to the commission of a tort.
But have you alleged Enterprise did anything? You're not suing that individual. Have you alleged?
We alleged that the dangerous condition was created by Enterprise. We alleged that the dangerous condition was caused or contributed to be caused by Cedar Crest as well as Peterson Properties.
What have you alleged occurred in Missouri?
What's
the connection to Missouri?
The allegations that we made that occurred in Missouri is includes the doing of business. It includes the allegations against Enterprise and Cedar Crest as it is pled in the petition are as to all defendants. So all of those long-arm jurisdictional elements were alleged.
Are you saying a tortious act occurred in Missouri? What are you saying occurred in Missouri for long-arm jurisdiction?
What I'm saying occurred in Missouri for long-arm jurisdiction purposes is the creation of the dangerous condition. Although that condition is located in Kansas, the acts and the omissions which created it were directed from Missouri through Enterprises as being the manager
of a site where a workman, a contractor, walked, carried a ladder and touched the overhead line.
There was an arcing of a power line that hit an aluminum ladder in Mr. Martinez's hands, which caused the electrocution injury. The allegations of negligence that go to Cedar Crest and contributing toward that was that they had, in the failing to maintain vegetation and landscaping and how this setup was, it was just a few feet, less than 10 feet from the power line, and it created this condition.
And why is that appropriate for suit in Missouri as opposed to in Kansas, though?
I believe
against Cedar Crest and against Peterson Properties?
I believe it is appropriate as to both. Our arguments are based on the managing, the commands coming from Missouri to the work that was done.
From Cedar Crest or Peterson Properties?
From Enterprises.
So how does that connect to suing Cedar Crest or Peterson Properties unless you pierce the veil?
From Enterprises to Cedar Crest. I believe that these are two different things, and if I'm wrong, I lose on this issue. And what I'm saying is that the agency in the long-arm statute is not identical to what it is that you establish in order to pierce the corporate veil in that sense.
Well, even if you're right, even if you can attribute all of the acts of everybody to everybody else for purposes of the long-arm statute, where does that get you with respect to specific jurisdiction?
Well, again, all of my arguments, long-arm statute, specific jurisdiction, and by far the weakest with regard to general jurisdiction, flow through the interaction of business between Missouri and Kansas as it relates to Enterprises, the Missouri defendant citizen.
But you're trying to use like a parent subsidiary argument, aren't you? That's not enough to impute jurisdiction on the Kansas entities.
I am saying that even if Enterprise was not the parent company of Cedar Crest, it would still be appropriate to sue in Missouri the same way. Let's say, even though these are not the facts of our case, that Enterprises hired another company that it did not own to run this apartment complex, and it was managing that group on what to do and what not to do with regard to what we allege is the dangerous condition at issue in this case. You're talking about the independent actions of two different entities.
And that might give you jurisdiction over Enterprise in Kansas, but why would it give you jurisdiction over the Kansas companies in Missouri?
Well, I believe that it is the connection between the actions of the agent as directed by the other entity.
Well, that might be true for the long-arm statute, but what case or line of cases suggests that you get the same benefit when you're doing a due process analysis?
I think in my two different contractors' cases, that would be a much harder argument to make. But here, because they are connected to Enterprises, then all of that business activity back and forth between Cedar Crest and Enterprises is going to be fair game in the facts of this case.
You're saying if there's an email from Enterprise to them that says, no, you can't expend the funds to cut down the vegetation. That gets you past the long-arm statute. And the fact that we regularly send checks back and forth for purposes of management contracts, that gets you the rest of what you need.
I believe all of those activities are fair game for the considerations of what constitutes contact, and I'd like to touch on that a little bit more toward the end of my argument if I have time. One thing I'd like to go back to, if I may, is that, first of all, it's our position that I don't believe that we should be here at this point. And what I mean by that is, if you go back and look at the motion to dismiss that was filed by the relator, the motion to dismiss, the relief it requested was to dismiss the first amended petition in its entirety with prejudice. That was the question that the trial court was given to answer. And the response from the trial court to that question was an order that simply said, motion is denied. In our response, we make our arguments and would request In the alternative, additional discovery, if the court basically is considering the dismissal, but that never came to be because the court simply said denied.
What additional discovery in particular were you saying you needed? Did you identify specific things you had not?
I don't believe that there was it did not list out specifically in the briefing what discovery would be requested. And what it would be the prongs under the statutory analysis of the business back and forth in Missouri and Kansas of the entities beyond what our allegations were in the admitted petition. But the reason I bring this up is because I believe it's four or five of the defendants are undeniably Missouri residents. So the court was asked to dismiss the entire petition based on jurisdiction, and the court simply said denied, because the question as presented to the court clearly did not warrant the relief being asked.
And who was the movant there?
The movant there was I'm going to have to look, I think.
It was all three entities, wasn't it?
It was Cedar Crest, Enterprises, and Peterson Properties' motion to dismiss plaintiff's first amended petition in its entirety with prejudice.
Of its entirety, you're suggesting that because if jurisdiction were proper to any defendant, then that motion couldn't have been granted.
Yes, Your Honor. Right. Or maybe another way of saying the same thing is, certainly within the discretion of the trial court in receiving the motion and the way that it was presented to the court, would be within its discretion to simply say deny. Now, I don't believe that then that should necessarily allow the cherry picking of filing a petition for writ when a good argument can be made that the trial court did not have the specific question that we are here arguing today before it, or was not given the opportunity to specifically make that ruling. And I think if it is a blanket denial of the motion, then at this level, when the court is looking at what the court did and why, then all benefits of the trial court being right, I believe, are to be assumed in the trial court's favor.
If the trial court had said that the motion is denied as to Enterprise and granted as to the other two, would you have sought a writ saying that the trial court had no authority to do that?
Let me make sure I understood the question. If the trial court had said basically that it was denied as to the Missouri defendants, including Enterprises, and granted as to the relators here, would I have filed?
Right. Is that one of the things the trial court had authority to do?
Yes, I believe the court could have chosen to rule that way. It was in the court's discretion to rule that way if it had chosen to. I know that there have been cases where there has been relief that I have sought that I've received in part but not whole. And I don't know of any reason why the trial court couldn't have done that here, but the trial court didn't.
Did their motion make arguments about jurisdiction over the other defendants besides the three movements?
Not that I recall off the top of my
head. So would anyone have thought they were saying it should be dismissed as to them when they filed the motion?
I can't answer that question. The only thing that I can answer is what was sought, both in the prayer and in the title of the motion, and what the trial court ordered, and whether or not that is sufficient enough for there to be an extraordinary remedy that's being asked for here. And I'll tell you one step that goes beyond that, because if there had been some sort of indication of ruling in part, then I do believe it would have been fair for the trial court to consider whether or not we would be entitled to conduct some discovery of those two entities before we would get to this part.
Why didn't you have an obligation to do that discovery or say don't rule on it until we get this discovery at that point? Because wouldn't it your obligation to make a prima facie case in response to their motion to dismiss under our prior cases?
I mean, the motion to dismiss was made. We briefed it as a motion to dismiss. We did not ask for...
But don't our cases say once they do that, you can't stand on your pleadings? You've got to make factual assertions, do affidavits, and so forth.
We did in the exhibits that you'll see attached to ours there, and relator's critical of some of those. But all of getting to another issue here in the time I've got left, these require factual determinations on the part of the trial court when we get to that part, to where each is submitting different affidavits and exhibits. The affidavit from Peterson, in addition to stating it was the enterprises managed Cedar Crest, also omitted stating that it did no business in Missouri. And so that omission is significant. We submitted exhibits that we thought were indication of evidence of business in Missouri. It was a fact determination.
Does that matter, though, under specific or general jurisdiction?
I believe that it matters, because then it's my understanding that if the case law says that if there is a mistake that the trial court makes on a factual determination as it relates to jurisdiction, then extraordinary remedy is not appropriate. Then it is the normal appeal process. And I have cite State X Rail Clem Transportation versus Gartner.
No, I'm saying it doesn't really matter. I'm not sure how it matters if they do business in Missouri, because we said that's not the question in deciding specific jurisdiction or general jurisdiction.
But with it being a specific jurisdiction question?
Uh-huh. Or general, question? Either one. We've said, I mean, it used to be, but they changed that.
I believe you would be looking at the nature and the extent of the business activity as to both, either specific or general jurisdiction, and also with regard to the, I believe some that would come into play with regard to the long arm statute as well, but certainly with regard to specific jurisdiction, possibly general jurisdiction, depending on what you find out. And for example, unlike like the Dolan case or Norfolk Southern, where there was business in 22 different states, and then you look how much of that is Missouri, here you may have with just two states, and there be a ton in Missouri. And
thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, before you get started, why don't you address the opposing attorney's argument with respect to this issue of who brought this motion and what the preliminary writ currently says. If we make the preliminary writ permanent, aren't we also dismissing Enterprise?
You are not, because I believe that the writ, the preliminary, the application for writ or petition for writ that was filed just on behalf of relators, and it sought a writ of prohibition with respect to the motion to dismiss as it relates to relators. And I think he's mischaracterized the pleadings in this case, and I'll just briefly read from page 10 of the motion to dismiss. I say, because Missouri's long-arm statute is not satisfied and because these defendants lack sufficient minimum contacts with Missouri, personal jurisdiction does not exist and the court must dismiss the petition as to defendants Cedar Crest, Peterson Properties, and Peterson. And there's another place where I say, because plaintiff fails to meet the requirements of the long-arm statute, personal jurisdiction does not exist and this court should dismiss the petition as to those defendants. Again, specifically, and I didn't ask that the entirety of the lawsuit be dismissed for jurisdictional purposes. Now, there was a alternative motion made on forum non-convenience saying Kansas is the more convenient location for this, and so I did, with respect to that, ask that the entirety of the lawsuit be dismissed on that basis. But to come in and say that because I represent multiple defendants and filed a motion relating to all those defendants, but made separate arguments with respect to each of those defendants, that the trial court somehow had to either pick, grant all the relief or grant none of the relief, is something that I've never encountered in my practice. And so I would submit to the court that the court certainly was within its jurisdiction to grant the motion to dismiss as it related to any entity. It felt the court lacked personal jurisdiction and was obligated to do so. I quickly want to touch on the subsidiary parent corporation thing, because I think that the Daimler case also is very telling in that. And I'll be honest, I thought that case was going to be about selling cars or something. The fact pattern in that case is crazy. But they, I mean, it's these people in Argentina, and they're saying that they're being kidnapped and tortured and all of this stuff in Argentina, and they're trying to bring a lawsuit in California, and they're arguing because Daimler, the parent company, does business in California, that that somehow makes them subject to jurisdiction in California. And that's somewhat similar. I mean, obviously the allegations are different, but that's what he's arguing here. And Daimler, the U.S. Supreme Court has rejected that. But I think what's even more significant is if we look at the affidavit in this case, he relies on the fact that the affidavit says that Enterprises is the managing member. That's corporate speak. That's how these entities are set up. I mean, that's what they're officially called. But if you look at the affidavit says Enterprises employs no personnel, none, so it's doing nothing, and its principal place of business is in Kansas. So to the extent he's making these arguments that Enterprises is sitting over here in Missouri committing this stuff, and that's somehow making Cedar Crest and Peterson property subject to jurisdiction in Missouri, that's contrary to the affidavit. The filing of the motion to dismiss put the burden on the plaintiff in this case to establish a prima facie case of personal jurisdiction, and it doesn't exist. I respectfully ask that the court issue a permanent writ dismissing the case as it relates to relators Cedar Crest Apartments and Peterson Properties. Thank you.
Thank you.